Well, we are well underway to 2020. It's February. Shayna, this is probably the fourth episode of the Ironcast. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. Hi, everybody.
Yeah, excited to have this time together. And we have some upgrades in the room. I just want to highlight that we are in a soundproof facility. Owen barricaded the door with some foam paneling. So hopefully this sounds even better. We're all about improvements in 2020. So anyway, we have some exciting things to talk about, some hot topics. One really cool thing is our first guest on the Ironcast, and we want to introduce Patrick, my homie. I'm glad you're here. Sorry for that stupid Super Bowl joke, but it had to happen. So you are the friendly neighborhood liturgist, Reason for God guy, home group leader, but you wear a lot of hats in our community. Welcome to the Ironcast, Patrick. How are you?
Wow. Thanks, Rob. That's probably the nicest thing you've ever said to me. Thanks for having me here. I'm really glad to be here.
We did kind of throw you under the bus last week, but
no.
So
I probably should listen to that podcast.
Yeah, you should, because that, you know, whoever we throw under the bus this week, that's who we're going to have on the following.
Okay. That's how we atone.
Seems fair.
We say sorry. So Patrick, we're very excited to have you on the Ironcast. Give us a glimpse into a day in the life of Patrick Gallagher.
Leave nothing out.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's really not that exciting, guys, but maybe a little bit about me. I live in Phoenixville off of First Ave. We moved into Phoenixville about a year and a half ago. And the reason for that is that we loved Ironworks, we love Phoenixville, and we really were desiring to have more community. And we realized that we couldn't really achieve that vision by living even a half hour away, not the type of intentional community that we wanted. So since we moved to Phoenixville, it's been awesome. I have a wonderful family, two lovely daughters, 6 and 4 years old. The 6-year-old just starting to lose her first tooth, so that's big, big.
Nice.
Yeah, very exciting times, very exciting times.
She's a late fanger. Sorry, it's a kid movie that I'm watching with Vera, but anyway.
And then other than that, I work in a business development role. Yeah. And
I'm hoping that you'll use some of your business language, like you mentioned in your liturgy. Just, you know, you'll circle back with us and maybe...
If you want some cliches, I've got them. So.
just
hit
talk
the
about,
on button and, yeah. And I can go.
Maybe we'll talk about the Ironcast, you know, the Q1, you know, results. And,
we'll have to check the Nielsen ratings, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The Nielsen ratings. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're also a frequent porch nighter, aren't you?
I am. Yes.
What is
so,
porch night?
I mean,
for
this
the
is
uninitiated.
Porch night is purely vocational.
Okay.
Yeah. Porch night is it's a great thing. I think it was devised by Luke Gale and by Ryan Estes, if I'm not mistaken. I apologize if I am misattributing that to anyone.
Maybe Jet, was he in on that too? He's kind of strange.
He was an early adopter at the very least,
yeah.
I would say. the leaders, yep. Right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that the vision, I think it was one of those things where you said porch and you had him right at that.
Yeah, right.
You know. So, porch night is a time where we get together. The requirements are that you have to be somewhere within Phoenixville proper, within walking distance to a good number of gentlemen. And we like to partake in good conversation and also good artisanal cocktails, preferably Prohibition era. Yeah, we do not allow any poor quality beer or alcohol. So that is a key requirement.
I know this because to the men's retreat, I brought a whole bunch of like light lager Yingling.
Yeah.
Untouched. Yeah. Untouched.
Yeah. Amateur hour.
Yeah. We like to be very inclusive at Ironworks, but porch night is, you know,
we are snobs.
Where we are, but there is actually, in all seriousness, a vocational goal with porch night. So one thing that's been really great about it is we have a core group of Ironworks guys that come. Based on availability, but we also like to invite neighbors, and we've had some great opportunities for building relationships with some of our neighbors, both Christian and non-Christian neighbors, and it's led to good conversations. It's led to people being invited to church or a Reason for God, things like that. So I think that's something we want to even further expand this next year, kind of not just doing it purely for socialization, which I think is a good cause, but also kind of having that sort of, you know, vocational focus as well.
So you all kind of congregate on one porch, like you all kind of flock there and hang out and then invite.
We've loosened the it should be a porch, you're right, but we've loosened the requirements to also back decks.
Yeah,
gotcha. Okay.
But
sorry.
Yeah.
That was a literal interpretation.
Wherever our wives will allow us to kind of, you know, create a little bit of a ruckus. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I enjoyed walking your neighborhood with you. You've expanded my vision to be more neighborly. So I think we will call you the friendly neighborhood liturgist.
Because we'll see if that sticks.
Yeah, we'll see if that. I think it's gonna be hot. But Shana, can you summarize the sermon for us, and then we're gonna dive into a big question for Patrick, and he better be ready.
Sure. So Darren opened up the sermon. He started out by saying when he first planted Ironworks, you know, with various people, one of the questions that he would ask is, will anyone come? And then he said that over the years, that's evolved into, will this work matter? Will our town be changed? And, you know, all these prayers we pray for our neighbors and friends, will they result in anything? He got into the book of Acts a little bit, and he talks about how the Christian movement, how it exploded, how it moved forward, even despite or maybe because of intense persecution. Talks about faith in power.
Yeah, he says that it's such a powerful movement, mm-hmm. that's the way the church should be, that if we yes. closed our doors, the community would miss us, right?
Yes, 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 thank you. He also highlighted, he says, the power of Christian faith comes from the centrality of mercy, mm-hmm. right? And he says, you know, can you discover how profoundly gracious God is? You know, even when we do wrong, can we discover his immense grace and mercy? He went over to Martin Luther and how Martin Luther was transformed by Romans 8. You know, he was challenging, maybe people could memorize it. How Martin Luther, he read this and he says, wow, God can accept me not because of what I do.
Was he Catholic before Patrick as well?
Yeah, yeah.
So he was originally Catholic, kind of a...
And I mean, to be honest, he wanted to stay Catholic too. He had no yes. intention mm-hmm. of developing this movement that's now Protestantism. He wanted to reform the church from within
yes.
until he realized it wasn't possible.
Yeah. And so then Darren continued, he says, in view of God's mercy, right, that as a result, we offer ourselves as a living sacrifice. And he talked about transformation, right? He says, how you know that you're getting the grace of God is because it's changing the way that you think. And he's referenced this in past sermons. I think a recent sermon Darren mentioned, when you do open up the Bible, that it changes you, right?
Yeah, right.
So, and he says, to have a transformed mind. This is Romans 12, 1 through 8. It says in verse 2, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will.
Talking about the word transform and how we're changed and mm-hmm. that our minds are changed. You know, Pastor Sam, a couple weeks ago talked about mm-hmm. the first thing that happened in his life that was mm-hmm. transformed was that he stopped smoking pot. And it wasn't because of anything in the Bible. He's like, it's not in the Bible. There's nothing about smoking pot in the Bible. He said, but what is in the Bible is suffering. And how we deal with our suffering. Mm-hmm. And he realized that he wasn't going to Christ with his suffering. He wasn't letting God soothe him and encourage him mm-hmm. and restore him. Instead, he was relying on a, you know, self-medication or, you know, self-plan.
A substance.
So mm-hmm. for me, yeah, the first transformation when I became a Christian, when Christ just came into my life and mm-hmm. On the scene, is I stopped cursing. Mm-hmm. And stopped dropping the F-bombs and started thinking that what I said mattered, my tongue mattered, how I mm-hmm. spoke mattered. Mm-hmm. So before we get to you, Patrick, Shana, what was the first thing that transformed in your life?
There's a lot of things I could say. I think the biggest one that I remember was when I was in high school and my relationship with Christ really took shape. I realized I was dating someone at the time in high school, and I was absolutely in love with this person, as much as you can be when you're in 10th grade. And I realized, as much as I love this person, I can't be with this person anymore. And I had been living my faith. I was reading my Bible. I was even like running Bible study at my high school. But I was like, we're running in two different directions. And this person is not amenable to faith. Like, he wants no part of it. And like through tears, I broke up with this person. I broke up with him. And I changed all of my walking paths so I wouldn't see him, because I knew that I would be too tempted to be with this person. And so even though I didn't want to, I did. And I broke up with him and I cried for weeks. And but I had an overwhelming sense that God was saying to me, hold on, it gets better than you know.
Yeah. Your affections were changing.
Yes.
So Patrick, for you, what kind of events led to your transformation? Talk to us about how you have been transformed.
Yeah, this was the hard one when you kind of gave me the prompt that you wanted to ask this question today. So I had to think a little bit about it because I was trying to see if there was a common thread between some of the transformative events in my life. And I kind of put it more in terms of events. That's kind of what came mm-hmm. to me. Some of them are things that would be more obvious, you know, when I had kids, for example. When I went to college, that's when Christ found me in college. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Phoenixville would be probably the most recent one. Mm-hmm. And I think I did find the common thread between all three of those transformative times. It was difficult. It stretched me. Mm-hmm. And there was an element of intentionality behind it, meaning that I actually had to make a choice that was hard that I didn't necessarily want to make mm-hmm. in all of those times. Mm-hmm. But that's when God worked through transformation. So to give you a couple examples, when I went to college, I had to learn. I was super wired towards ambition. I still am. It's still something I contend with. And I just wanted to go to the best possible college that I could go to. Why? Because of pride. Just basically because of pride, because of sheer ambition. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a Christian either. Realizing I couldn't do that for practical reasons and ended up going to Grove City, which is a Christian school. Mm-hmm. And it was great because I encountered the gospel for the first time. So that was a really difficult time. I was completely stretched in terms of social stretching, completely different environment. So that led to tremendous growth. Then children. That was clearly around self-orientation and not being able to be as self-oriented and having to actually make the choice to give up my liberties and my rights, which I think every parent can kind of identify with.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's like an intentional choice that you make and you know it's going to be a good thing, but you don't know how, you know, no one knows how hard of a thing it is until you actually mm-hmm. do it. Mm-hmm. And then moving to Phoenixville, we had this different vision in mind when we moved out to the country in Elverson, which is about a half hour away from here. We wanted to have a quiet lifestyle, you know, do some farming, do some, mm-hmm. you know, and pursue community at our own terms when we wanted to do it, mm-hmm. you know, and we thought we could somehow make that happen. So then when we realized that wasn't actually the right vision, we were convicted of that. But at the same time, there were still some elements of that lifestyle that we had to abandon. We had to abandon the house that we loved. We had to abandon the land that we loved, mm-hmm. beauty, quiet, things like that. Things that are actually good, I think. Sure. But we had to give it up to move here. And then we went like complete opposite and moved on to First Ave, kind of, you know.
Your neighbors share a wall.
Yeah, and we share a wall, right? That was very different, you know, at first. But so all of those things, I think we had to kind of, you know, like it involved times of intentionality, of some degree of sacrifice. But with that being said, all of those events led to tremendous transformation mm-hmm. in my life and the greatest periods of growth and the greatest periods of blessing mm-hmm. through the grace of God. So mm-hmm. I'm so happy for it now when I look back at it, but they were all maybe difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, as he goes through this passage deeper, past the transforming of our minds, our affections, learning what God's will is and not just our own will, mm-hmm. but, you know, going through that, then he begins to dive into this as we discover our limits mm-hmm. and our design. What in the world is that about?
Yeah, so for discovering your limits, Darren points out verse 3. And verse 3 reads, "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you." And Darren pointed out like some fallacies, if you will. Like mm-hmm. he says how sometimes people interpret this verse to be like, well, here is my talent, you know, but I should like maybe take it down a notch, yeah. right?
So not be so talented among
right.
other people.
Yeah,
like,
or just pretend, right. pretend humility,
right?
right?
Be
yeah.
modest, you know? But he's saying that's, and he even said, you know, for a time that's how he interpreted it. But he actually says, you don't think of yourself clearly when you're not sober, right?
When you live an isolated life where mm-hmm. you think that you don't need other people. So when you think mm-hmm. that you're self-sufficient
yes.
in, you know, that God has given you everything that you need for godliness, for the life that you're supposed to live apart from other people. He mentioned that as one of the fallacies, I think, yeah. that would cause you to not be sober. And it really stuck out to me, because then he kind of built on that and said, you know, and it mentions in this passage that every member belongs to the body.
Yes.
Right? And he kind of drew that out. And that was really, I thought that was really interesting to be a reminder that, you know, and we don't talk about that very often, but like, we belong to each other. Like, you know, all of us in this room right here are part of a body. We've made a commitment to the church that we are going to care for each other. And that's one of the, actually the vows you make when new members enter the church, right? They make a membership commitment to the church, and you make a membership commitment as the congregation to support them, right? Kind of alluding to this passage. And I just thought that was really interesting. And it also humbled me to think, I feel like I'm doing so poorly in that ownership of some people in our church. You know, like I should view them as brothers and sisters, and some of them I barely even know, you know, so that was convicting to me too.
Yeah, I think too, I see our church growing, and I think we have to think about this passage where how do we continue to fulfill its calling, you know, even while we grow, you know, because when Ironworks was only 30 some people, that was way different, you know. I felt like I knew people so deeply, whereas here,
yeah, I think Darren would say we have to get smaller as we get bigger. We have to go into the home groups, as awkward as that might be, that if you don't, you won't feel connected to the members.
Song of Myself, it's a long, long poem written by Walt Whitman. And in the first part of it, he says, "For every atom belonging to me, as much belongs to you." Right. And Walt Whitman was a humanist. He was, you know, he was a pluralist, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, he wouldn't identify as a Christian, but he was aware of Christian doctrine. And as much as, you know, we don't have things in common with Walt Whitman, the things that he says in that poem, you know, he says, you know, every atom belonging to me also belongs to you, right? How taking ownership of each other.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, being our brother's keeper, bearing each other's burdens.
Know, and I think that that is, there's an element of that that is within our culture today, but it's kind of trite, the way that it's often phrased. Hold hands and kumbaya, and we all belong together. Whereas the Christian, I got your back, right? Like it's something that people say, you know, but as a Christian, I think we have a much deeper grounding to actually be able to do that by having a shared identity.
Yes.
Right? That's something that you don't hear talked about in culture today.
Yeah.
That the reason is that we're part of the same body.
Right.
Right? Like, meaning we have the same mission. We have different functions, but the same end goals. And we love the same God. And that brings us, you know, to a much different position that way.
Let me react negatively to the word membership quickly. I'm from Gen X.
Go off.
Yeah.
I'm going to get controversial in here.
Okay. Two millennials here and a Gen Zer, I think. But I was talking with a Gen Z student afterwards, and he listened to the sermon, and he said, you know, I was tracking with everything that Pastor Darren said, except for when he started talking about membership. And he's like, I don't really think we need to be members, you know, at a church. And in my heart, I said, I don't want to curse, but I was like, you know, I was like, we don't need to be members. You know, Gen X was can you say damn on here? No, no, not so much.
It's all going to get censored.
How can we talk about hell if we don't say hell?
Can you put a little bleep? Just, they'll never know what he said.
That would be but I was agreeing with him, but I played devil's advocate, and I said, you know, I think for the first time when Darren was talking about membership, I saw it differently, and that I felt like that I'm a member, so I belong to other people. And not everyone can relate to a football analogy, but this Gen Zer could. So I related it in this way. And I said, are we the people that are in the stands, or are we on the team and we're on the field playing?
Absolutely.
You know, there's a difference. Yep. So I feel like that's the temptation if we're preparing our hearts for worship, is to come and be like people in the stands. And I love being casual and having my cup of coffee and just being chill. But at the same time, I'm wondering, does that help me? Am I too relaxed around God? You know, like we talk about our bodies and our postures.
Sure.
Could I want to circle back. No, see, there you go. There it is. Cliche. Who added on the bingo
so
card?
So natural.
So, no, I do. I want to go back to, just briefly, to that point that you made about the perspective that I don't really need to be a member. Because I am, first of all, I am sympathetic to that. Because I think that where it's coming from often is a place of distrust and being burnt mm-hmm. in the past.
Sure.
Right? By church, by maybe growing up in a broken home, a lot of... So I get it. I get it, and I'm sympathetic of that. With that being said, I would ask those people that have those mm-hmm. objections to reconsider, because there is something to be said about intentionally joining a community and putting your mark on that and saying that this is mine, mm-hmm. right? It's I liken it to like the vows of marriage in mm-hmm. a certain way, right? Like, well, why can't we just live together, mm-hmm. right? Why can't we just do that and we'll just keep this arrangement going for a while? No, I mean, like, there's something to be said about vows. There's yes. something to be said about making a commitment.
A covenant.
A covenant, yes. right? And I would just consider, is that coming from a place of just rejecting authority?
Mm.
And whose authority are you ultimately rejecting there? Mm-hmm. Is it possible that you're rejecting God's authority, saying that he wants you to be in a covenant community? He wants you to submit to the authority, you know, the broken mm-hmm. leadership in that church, and our leadership is not perfect mm-hmm. whatsoever, right? They're wonderful, lovely men, but they're not perfect. Mm-hmm. But we're supposed to submit to them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And submit to the broken PCA church and the broken church globally. And there's something beautiful when you do that.
That was one of the points that Darren made. And he says discovering limits that you weren't aware of, right? He kind of segues into community, right? Where he says that in verse 4 and 5, where it mentions us being part of the body, right? We form one body, we belong to each other. He says, you've been designed with limits, and you are in need of the gifts of others.
Yeah.
Right? You belong to the person sitting next to you.
Yeah.
And so as much as this brokenness is so hard to submit to, it's part of the design that causes us to be interdependent, right? Same thing with marriage, right? Where you have this broken person and you yourself are broken, right? But you're bound to them, and sometimes you fill gaps and it's terrific and you really do help each other. And other times there's giant chasms and you're like, however can we bridge this gap, right? But yeah, you're right. As much as like this community is broken, God has designed it that way, you know, to make us interdependent of each other.
And I think James K. Smith points out in Desiring the Kingdom that, you know, liturgy is identity formation. Mm-hmm. So it's saying that if we don't belong to each other, and if we don't become members and join this body, we will not know who we are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
We only discover who we are and our gifts in community with each
yes.
other. Because I realize maybe there's a gap here and God is calling me to step in. And I have a skill to do that. And maybe someone else mm-hmm. does. I see that in them and I call them out. I think Paul does that in the Bible. You know, we can talk about this idea of where do our gifts come from and how do yeah. we discover them? How do we use them?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Paul writes letters to Timothy, young Timothy, and he's like, remember, I prayed over you.
Mm-hmm.
And I prayed over you that you would have this gift and you should fan it into flame mm-hmm. and you should use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sometimes we need to call it out onto other people, say, hey, you have this gift. I only pray over you that you get mm-hmm. excited about it and use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but I want to not miss out on mm-hmm. who I'm supposed to be, you know, and how, and you know, we, different people, their callings and their identities. I want them to thrive in that capacity. So,
yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about our kids, you know, do they prevent me from worshiping God on Sunday morning when my kid is squirreling?
A little.
spilling that coffee.
Does my kid distract you from worshiping on Sunday morning? You know, I know she's distracting other kids, but so I wanted to ask you that question, Patrick. Do our kids, and this is an important part of our members, right? Because
yeah.
we have this belief that they should be in, that they're included, they're allowed to be yeah. in the service.
Yeah.
So how do we worship when the kids are in the service?
Yeah, I mean, the best we can.
No, but
I
mean,
best we can.
But let me. I'll put it this way. I mean, I think it's such a beautiful thing that the kids are in the service. Yes, is it distracting? Sure. Is it, you know, perfectly conducive to getting into the right mental state for worship? Not always. Not always. But you know, I had a former pastor say that every time he hears the cry of a baby, it's the sound of the covenant to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I think that's a really nice way of putting it, that every time we hear, you know, someone disrupting or whatever it is, like that is, we're in a covenant community together, right? We're members, and that includes our families mm-hmm. as well, right?
Sure.
Who are part of it. So, and the fact is too, let's not pretend here that we have everything all put together and have to have this neat, tidy, cleaned up service, as if God would only accept our worship and praise if we had this perfect, you know, type of liturgy. I think that God takes a lot of pleasure in the children being there. And yes. I look and I see Vera and I see Anna Rose singing along and doing doodle dance and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that brings me tremendous joy. And I'm sure it brings our God tremendous joy too.
When I'm in the service and I have Anna Rose and she will just continually interrupt or she'll drop something. And it makes me reflect on, you know what, like, what's more important here, you know? Like, yes, I didn't catch every word that was said, right? But I'm so focused on hearing the service that I'm, like, not hearing the service. And, like, you know, it's just, there's a sense of irony there where what's more important is that Anna Rose is there and she is participating and I'm guiding her. And it's not, worshiping isn't catching every single word your pastor says, you know? And especially if you're, like, you know, becoming increasingly frustrated with your kid and like ready to like, you know, twist their arm because they're just driving you so crazy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Twist some other kid's arm.
I'm too sanctified.
Punt that kid out of the service.
Which I can say the same. Yeah. But I find it to be, it kind of checks me, you know, and it's a really helpful reality check for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk to me about gifts. Talk to us, our listeners, like as they prepare for worship, as they come in on Sunday, they're thinking, oh my goodness, maybe I should be more up my game here. I should be more involved. I should use my gifts. Maybe I don't know what my gifts are. So talk to me about these ideas of gifts and discovering them. And
Can I read verse six really quick?
Yeah, that's great.
So the end of the passage, it says, we have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. And this is not the only passage in the New Testament that where gifts are like very directly outlined, right? So,
and it's great that they are too, because it really adds some kind of, you know, meat on the bones for it.
So this is not an exhaustive list. There's
not at all. One of the first things I would say here is maybe two things I would say. The first is that kind of what you were saying, Rob, gifts are a blessing and it's not just a service to God and to our community. It is, but the effect is that it is a blessing to you. And I don't know if you guys agree, but and I'm still figuring this whole process out of what my spiritual gifts are and how to use them for my community and for the kingdom. But sometimes you do get it right. Mm-hmm. And when you get it right and you're thriving, like you said, or excelling at something and you're feeling effective, you feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And that is a wonderful thing that that God blesses us with in through his grace, right? Mm-hmm. This is not a work that I do. I don't mean it like that. Mm-hmm. But that is a great thing, and it's a great encouragement to me, and it keeps me going. So that's the first thing. And the second thing I would say would be, sometimes I think we have the tendency of looking at passages like this and immediately making it very law-heavy. These are the gifts here, so I need to just be X. I need to be a teacher. I need to be an encourager. I'm not, and then, you know, we put the standard here, and we fall short of it, and we feel really bad about that. And we are then not thriving, right? Mm-hmm. So I would encourage the listener to not hear it in terms of law, but to, and Darren went back and did this really well by saying how actually this is gospel. This is good news for us that the reason that this happens in our lives is because God is sanctifying us. He is using, he created us this way before the foundation of the world. He knew that we would be this way. Mm-hmm. He knew he would put you in this context with this particular gift to do this particular thing. And then he enables you to do it so that you can be a blessing to your neighbor and that you can feel like you're thriving,
right.
Mm-hmm. and live a good life. And that's gospel, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is. It's good news.
And Darren mentions a few passages, right? He mentions the passage, I've prepared these good things beforehand that you would walk in them, right? So like these come from God. These aren't things that we have to muster, right?
Exactly.
And that's the burden of law that we have right. to measure up, but it's actually right. God. God has designed them and we walk in them. And he also mentions, right alongside of that, he mentioned Psalm 139, right? How God created us. And also Jeremiah 29:11, you know, he has plans for us. So, you know, it really is life-giving. It really is gospel for sure.
It's syncing with his design.
Yes.
I think this passage reveals that we can discover our gifts too by the first few verses, that by the renewing of our mind, we begin to understand what God's will is, his good, his pleasing and perfect will. Like you said, Patrick, earlier, we don't have all the answers in understanding, you know, where these gifts come from, how we get them, you know, identifying them, but we can say that it's going to happen in community. That it's going to happen together as a body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we end here, in closing thoughts, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. This is good news. We hope for everyone that's listening to that you would be able to discover your gifts, that you would see membership as that you are wanted here, that you belong here. Mm-hmm. And that's also, we would encourage you as we encourage ourselves to just not conform any longer to the pattern of this world. That's a rut. It's an empty, dead end. But the renewing of our minds brings us in sync with God. Mm-hmm. So we hope that for everyone today. Patrick, thanks for being with us.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for having me.
And Shana, of course, always great to be with you. All right, Ironworks, we'll see you in a couple weeks.